to Empire on KFCF 88.1, independently owned and locally operated since 1975 in Fresno. My name is Dan Yassin. I'm an anti-war and anti-empire activist. Jerry Bill is at the controls. Today is December 20th, 2017, third Wednesday of the month. Every third Wednesday from 3 to 3:30 p.m., I interview authors, scholars, bloggers, columnists, and activists who help us look at our world through the prism of American imperialism. On the show, we talk about U.S. foreign and domestic policy and the actions of the military-industrial surveillance complex. These actions have severe consequences not only for the people here in America, but also for the people in other countries. To create a better, humane, and a compassionate world, we must first understand what is being done in our name, and we must always be willing to stand up, speak out, and speak truth to empire. Today we have Cindy Sheehan on telephone with us. Hello, Cindy.
Hi, Dan. Nice to talk to you again.
Thank you for being my guest on the show. Peace, Mom.
Thanks for inviting me.
Peace, Mom, author, blogger, and radio talk show host Cindy Sheehan is one of America's leading anti-war activists. Cindy has traveled extensively to join anti-war rallies and anti-empire events and to meet with activists and leaders in the U.S. and in other countries. Her website is www.cindysheehanssoapbox@blogspot.com. Cindy, you were my guest on the show last year right after the election. At that time, we could only prognosticate what Trump is going to do. Now, it is a year later. He is about to complete his first year in office. Obama minced words, but not Trump. He's rash, vulgar, and annoying. Cindy, give us your take on Trump's first year as president.
Well, thank you. I think you summed it up, vulgar, crass, and annoying. And the thing is, Obama was more of a smooth talker, and he, Trump has made the contradictions and hypocrisy of the empire obvious in his first year. He doesn't mince words. He doesn't sugarcoat things. He has said, you know, outright that he could, that the U.S. could obliterate North Korea with nuclear bombs, even though Obama and every president since Truman have basically said the same thing, but they've said it saying no options are off the table, you know, meaning not ruling out the use of nuclear weapons if, you know, the United States feels like it's necessary. And Trump has been, very outspoken about these issues. He has a Twitter account that to me is mind-boggling, that anybody in his sphere of advisors thinks that that's a good idea, that he should have a Twitter account or that he should be the one in control of using it. I don't know. I just don't know what to say. We both know that the empire is very vicious. It's very violent. And, you know, Trump has expanded some of the military misadventures of the United States, sending more troops to places like Syria, Niger, Afghanistan, you know, and has used some big weaponry in his tenure so far as president. So it's just, we just find ourselves in the same situation where 7 or 8 wars, the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, the police state is increasing, and the surveillance state is increasing. And I don't think we would be sitting here much better off if Hillary Clinton had won.
Yep. What can you say about the U.S. and the USAns that they will elect a person who bragged about groping women and was accused of by multiple women of sexual harassment.
Right. Well, I think that, you know, it doesn't say very much about people who would vote for somebody like that. But, you know, then you have who else were people supposed to vote for? Hillary Clinton, whose husband is a serial sexual assaulter, and who herself has covered up and excused his sexual, you know, his sexual misconduct for decades. And so we see now that some people are being held accountable for that, and I think that's a really good thing. And I think that the president should not be excused from accountability if the president sexually harassed or sexually assaulted women. And, you know, I think that it should be something, I think it's a good conversation that we're having, and I think it's good for women to finally be heard on these issues. But I know there's a lot of women who felt very betrayed and have suffered greatly under, the horrible attention from Bill Clinton. So we just really have to, hold all men accountable if they behave this way, not just people in Hollywood or senators or representatives, but from the top down for sure. And, you know, Trump, one thing about Trump is he played to people's, people were very, felt very disconnected from the U.S. government. They felt like, we feel like we don't have a voice in the U.S. government. And Trump was, used very right-wing populist rhetoric, right? Mm-hmm. He played on people's instincts of racism, misogyny, and feeling like, you know, like they've been left out of the political system. But, you know, so, and then there was Sanders, who played to the left-wing populist feelings. So we can't say that everybody who voted for Trump is a racist or a misogynist or is excusing his sexual misconduct. Some people really felt like he was an alternative to the Clinton machine or the Democratic Party, who actually stole the election from Bernie Sanders and presented a very unviable candidate.
Well, you did mention that about the women coming out. So this is a recent phenomenon. I don't know if it's a byproduct of Trump's election, because so much anti-Trump stuff is going on that women are willing to come out and talk about the abuses that they suffered decades ago. And some very well-known people, like you said, big names have fallen. Tell us more about it. What has caused it?
Well, I think that we have been trying to expose sexual abuse for a very long time, but women we've been threatened, we've been discounted, we've been women who try to get some kind of accountability for being harassed or assaulted by people, by men who are in power over them. And, you know, also there's been some men who have had men in power over them who feel like they've been sexually assaulted or abused. And so we have been trying to get accountability for this and to get it to stop for a long, long time. And so maybe because, Trump actually talked about it before he was elected, maybe it got people to start, other people to start listening now. Maybe, they're willing to listen to women and hold these men accountable. But, you know, I don't know, was it just like, it seems to have started all with Harvey Weinstein, and it seems like once one woman was brave enough to stand up, that a lot of women just, you know, started recounting their stories. But also there, you know, there's a situation where sometimes we don't feel comfortable, we don't feel protected, and we feel like we're going to lose our livelihoods or whatever if we come out and complain about men or try to get some kind of accountability. Oftentimes women were the ones that paid for that, and not the powerful men. So, you know, I'm thinking it's a good thing. Like I said, we have to hold all men who do this accountable.
Oh yeah. I mean, that is, should not become acceptable at all, sexual harassment,
right,
or sexual assault. All U.S. presidents, I mean, Republicans or Democrats, continue the wars they inherit and start a war or two on their own. Obama did that, and now we see Trump, as you mentioned earlier, is escalating the wars he inherited from Obama, and from his vitriolic rhetoric against North Korea, it seems he's ready to start a war with North Korea, and many pundits believe that we are moving towards a war with North Korea. What do you think the possibility and how horrible it will be?
Well, I think that North Korea, of course, is no match for the U.S. military might, but, you know, if it engaged the whole region, it could be very disastrous, especially if the United States is willing to use nuclear weapons. And there's South Koreans, there's North Koreans, there's Americans, there's Japanese close by, Chinese close by. I mean, it could be a major disaster. And one of my grandchildren, my 8-year-old granddaughter, asked me last week, she said, you know, do you think Trump would really use nuclear bombs? And I just said, honey, we just have to hope he loves his children and grandchildren as much as I love my children and grandchildren, because, you know, we have to remember, Dan, that the United States is the only country that has used nuclear weapons. And so it's been a real concern. It's been a very realistic fear my entire life, that the world could be wiped out in a nuclear holocaust. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that's been preventing it, I think, is that mutually assured destruction. Mm-hmm. And nobody is going to get out of a nuclear war. And it doesn't matter how rich a person is or where that person lives, it's going to be disastrous for the entire world. So, you know, and look at when we had a conventional war in Korea, it was disastrous for the Korean people. So I just have seen, since Trump has been president, I haven't seen much energy invested in opposing the U.S. empire. I've seen a lot of energy invested in opposing, you know, peripheral things. I think that they have all been important, and I think that every issue is important. But the most important issue is the war machine and stopping the U.S. empire. It's like killing so many people. You know, as you know, this is something that has been both of our main concerns for a long, long time, is stopping the wars. And I just thought, one thing, if Trump becomes president, would be that there would be a renewed interest in anti-war activism. And I really haven't seen that at all. And to me, that's we know the institutional Democrats, the people who are quote unquote elected there, when it comes to war and peace, they're not any better than the Republicans. We don't have anti-war sentiment is not represented at all in Washington, D.C. So, you know, we need a big people's movement to address this issue. And I just I thought maybe if Trump prosecutes the wars that the people would be against them, but I really haven't seen it that much. Have you?
Nope. And there is a reason for that, because a mainstream media is not talking about it, because, as you suggested, that the war support comes from both sides of the aisle. It's not just Republican support war and Democrats don't. So that's part of the reason. and they're just waiting for him to start the war, and they'll just support him. That's what it seems like. You are listening.
Well, when he, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I would say when he asked for, I think it was $640 million, mm-hmm. $1 billion for the Pentagon. The Congress gave him $60 billion more than he asked for. The
yes.
Senate did, and it was a very bipartisan effort to give the war machine more money.
Yep, that's the way it is. Yep. You're listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on KFCF 88.1, independently owned and locally operated since 1975 in Fresno. We are speaking with anti-war and anti-empire activist Cindy Sheehan. Cindy, you have spent several months studying about the great October Socialist Revolution on its centennial anniversary. Give us a summary of that groundbreaking and historic event.
Well, yes, I spent the whole year actually putting some effort into finding out more about it. I'm a Cold War baby. I was born in 1957. I was raised to fear the Soviet Union, to fear the Red Menace, to fear what we used to call Red China, and so and taught all kinds of untrue things about the Soviet Union and about communism. I mean, I was born during the end of the hearings in Washington D.C., mm-hmm. the House Un-American Activity Committee. McCarthyism, and so it's been quite an eye opener to learn about the revolution. For one thing, it was a peasant revolution. It was a more of a people's revolution than the one that the United States had, which was more of like a bourgeois revolution, I think they would call it if that term existed back then. But the revolution in Russia took the power away from their 1%, the elite of the day, and they gave it and put it in the hands of the people. And it was very successful. And the slogan was peace, land, and bread, mm-hmm. and it was very successful in making communes and into collectivizing farming and industrial output and the economy and things like that. And also one thing that we're not taught in the United States was that if it wasn't for the Soviet Union, the Soviet Union was the country that defeated fascism and Hitler and was the first one to liberate the concentration camps in Germany. And the Soviet Union sustained horrific losses in World War II. Like 30 million people were killed in the Soviet Union during World War II. So just to learn, that side of history, to learn the real history of what happened, but also to kind of, it's been relevant because of the Russiagate. And what's happening now is the so-called liberals are turning into the neo-McCarthyites and red-baiting and, telling people that if you disagree with them, that you must be being paid by Putin or whatever. And I see like Jill Stein is being investigated for going to Russia. I mean, it's just incredible that the Soviet Union is Russia, not even the Soviet Union anymore. It's not communist anymore, but it's a ready-made enemy that for decades we were taught to fear. And so it seems like now that Putin and Russia are the new boogeyman, not so much Islam, even though it's still a very useful pretense for build up of the military industrial complex, except, Russia could also be a real scary country to get into, even though, you know, they spend far less than the United States does on the military, and even though their economy is smaller than the United States, they also have nukes. They also have a military capability of destroying the world with their nukes. So that's what's been, I think, fascinating, is when the 100th anniversary finally came, the corporate media was all talking about how horrible communism was, how horrible the Soviet Union was, equating, you know, Putin with Stalin and all kinds of terrible comparisons and false comparisons and everything. So yes, I just, people could go on the soapbox, and we do have a series that people can read, a historical series about the gains that were made after the great October Socialist Revolution, if people want more information about that.
You also wrote an article about the emancipation of women in the Soviet Union. Tell us mm-hmm. about that.
I was really, I read a collection of Vladimir Lenin's writings on the emancipation of women, and I was just delighted about, even at like the end of the 19th century, in the late 1800s, he was talking about, you know, liberating women and from the drudgery of housework and farm work, and, you know, from he and the revolution supported divorce rights for women, abortion rights for women. So, I mean, I was just really surprised to find how advanced the thinking on the revolution was about not just giving, like, making women equal with men, but a total liberation, emancipation of women. And it was just very, very surprising. And I was very delighted to read about the advanced thinking before even the women in the United States had the right to vote. Mm-hmm. They were talking about all of these important issues for women.
Cindy, reading your blogs, I was delighted to learn that after the 1917 Great October Socialist Revolution, the very first act of the Second Congress of Soviets was the adoption of the Decree of Peace. Tell us about mm-hmm. the significance of that decree.
Well, you know, people, they don't... Most people here, especially in the United States, they don't understand that socialism, the base word for socialism is social. And the significance of the Soviet Union's declaration of peace was that it was for complete sovereignty of countries and to also participate and support liberation struggles in countries where the countries were being ruled by despots or dictators or global imperialism, which was usually led by U.S. or British imperialism at that time. So the people, by the time of the 1917 revolution, were just beat down by war. World War One, the czars they kept on pushing the people more war, and they were so tired of war. So that socialism is in and of itself a peaceful ideology. Yeah, I was in Venezuela when Chavez was president, and they had the same philosophy of sovereignty of nations to support people who were trying to struggle free from oppression, support the Palestinians in their struggle for liberation from Zionist Israel, and I asked them, I said, so So you're a socialist, so you're supposed to be very, you know, in the eyes of the United States, you're supposed to be very violent and warlike. So how many countries are you at war with right now? Zero. How many countries is Venezuela occupying? Zero. You know, so it's about sovereignty, and it's about helping, like I said, oppressed people in their and supporting oppressed people in the liberation struggles. And we as anti-imperialists and socialists here in the United States, we should also be in solidarity with workers and oppressed people around the world, even when our own country is oppressing them.
Cindy, with a few minutes left, let's bring it back home, because you probably heard this morning the millionaires in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. are celebrating mm-hmm. a tax cut that they passed for right. billionaires. And it is just days after, just last week, a couple of reports came out, one of them 2018 World Inequality Report, which said that the United States is far more unequal than all the industrialized countries. So tell us about, in a couple, 3 minutes we have, about the inequality that we have and this tax cut.
Well, we know that three people in this country own more wealth than about 250 million people in this country. And, you know, those three people aren't Republican donors. They're actually Democrat donors. And so we have, you know, also Trump put out on Monday his national security strategy. And one of the strategies is to protect American prosperity. And so what that means is to protect the prosperity of the 1%, of the war profiteers, of the bankers. And you're right. It's the Congress is a millionaires club, especially the Senate. I think their average wealth is $8 million. That doesn't mean they're all millionaires, but, you know, like somebody in California, I think it's ISA, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's him, has something like $350 million.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it brings the average up. But, you know, so these millionaires are always in service to the billionaires. And now 100 billionaires we have. It's just, to me, that is criminal and it's immoral. And these billionaires like Bezos, however you say his name, of Amazon has $100 billion when he pays workers in India $222 a year.
Cindy, we have just a half a minute left. So
that should be illegal.
Okay, it should be illegal. I agree with you. So it is just, things seem getting worse by the day. Thank you so much.
So.
Thank you so much for being my guest on the show. Until next time.
Thank you, Dan. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You have been listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on KFCF 88.1, independently owned and locally operated since 1975 in Fresno. We were speaking with Cindy Sheehan, anti-war and anti-empire activist. My name is Dan Yassin, host of the show. Thank you for listening. I'll be back third Wednesday of next one. Goodbye.